Support for this NPR podcast and the following message come from Easy Cater, committed to helping companies, from nonprofits to the Fortune 500, find food for meetings and company events. With online ordering and 24/7 live support, learn more at easycater.com.
You're listening to Shortwave from NPR. Joe Palca, are you prepared? Are you ready to go to Locust Town?
I am, Dr. Maddie Sophia Person. Go ahead.
Okay, Joe Palca, you were in Arizona visiting kind of an unusual lab.
Yes, I was. I was in a lab in the middle of Tempe, Arizona, that's filled with locusts.
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 My understanding of locusts is very biblical, like terrifying, swarmy.
Yep, that's the locusts we're talking about. But they're not just biblical, because today, as we sit here in Studio 44 in Washington, D.C., there are major issues. For example, in Kenya and Ethiopia and Somalia, there are huge swarms of locusts. And these swarms, according to the Food and Agriculture Organization of the United Nations, are, quote, extremely alarming and represent an unprecedented threat to food security and livelihoods in the region.
So how do we fight it?
So the problem is you can't spray them into submission. I mean, it's just there's too many of them. It's too big an area. It's a lot of pesticides. So what they're trying to do at the lab in Arizona is come up with other ways. And one of them has to do with what locusts like to eat.
So today on the show, how do you prevent a plague of locusts? The solution could be a low-carb diet.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Integrative Therapeutics, with vitamins and supplements previously available only through practitioners, including Cortisol Manager. Unlock your best self with clinician-curated supplements from Integrative Therapeutics, now on Amazon. Support for NPR and the following message come from Indeed. When it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Get a $75 sponsored job credit at Indeed.com/shortwave. Terms and conditions apply. This message comes from NPR sponsor HubSpot. More to-dos, less time, and an infinite number of tools to keep track of. Doing business has never felt harder. But you don't need a miracle to hit your goals. You just need HubSpot, because their all-in-one customer platform can make growing your business infinitely easier. Imagine this: higher quality leads, fast closing deals, wildly happy customers, and more benchmark-breaking quarters. It's not a miracle, it's HubSpot. Visit HubSpot.com to get started today.
Okay, Joe, let's start with some basics. What is a locust?
It's an interesting question, because here's the mantra that you hear from every locust researcher I've ever talked to. And here it goes.
Yeah.
All locusts are grasshoppers, but not all grasshoppers are locusts. You got it? Okay.
Yeah.
So what does that mean? Well, it turns out there's something like 20,000 species, or some number like that, of grasshoppers in the world, and only about 19 of them can become locusts. And what happens is there's a change, a physical change in the brain, in the wing size, in the coloration, that happens because certain species of grasshoppers, when you pack them together, literally just pack them together, grow them up in litters like you would puppies or something like that, they turn into this thing that we know as locusts.
So a locust is just a type of grasshopper that gets really close to other grasshoppers and gets real riled up.
Yes, they call it Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde.
I will never look at my neighborhood grasshopper the same way.
The grasshoppers you're going to see in your backyard, you don't need to worry about, because in the United States of America, there are no locust species. And it wasn't always the case. So the woman who runs this lab in Arizona is a woman named Ariane Cease, and she's head of something called the Global Locust Initiative. And she told me about the biggest locust swarm ever recorded. And you know where it was?
Where?
In this country.
Oh.
The largest swarm ever recorded was the size of about the state of California.
That is so gross.
So you had swarms flying overhead for days, And whenever they landed, they pretty much ate everything. It was really devastating.
So did you read the Laura Ingalls Wilder Little House on the Prairies book?
I think I did.
Well, there was one of them where she talks about this. Well, she called them grasshoppers. In fact, they were locusts. They called the Rocky Mountain locusts that devastated the farm that she was growing up on.
Could you imagine them just swarming overhead for days? No, I do not like that. I'm not comfortable with that.
But that's what got me intrigued because, I mean, what? I never heard of this. And it turns out that the Rocky Mountain locust did this in the 1870s. And everybody think, oh, my goodness, is this going to happen again? Are we going to have our crops wiped out? And the answer was, well, no, it never did. And they don't know why. And then sometime in the early 1900s, this locust was declared extinct.
Do we know why it went extinct in the United States?
Good question. The answer is not for sure. But Ariane Cease thinks
it's most likely due to human use of the landscape with bringing in lots of cows, for example, tilling areas that hadn't been tilled before and potentially disrupting egg beds.
And that interfered with their ability to survive because they're gone. And in a way, that leads to some of the things that she's most interested in the work that she's doing in Arizona, because they're trying to figure out ways of changing human behavior in a way that will affect locust vitality.
All right, so take me to their lab.
Well, the lab is into the basement of a building, and there's a keypad, right? Because they don't want people wandering into the locust lab, but even more important, they don't want anybody wandering out. Because these guys are a potential pest,
right.
And so there's a lot of barriers to keep them from going. So I was at the lab, and the lab research manager, a guy named Rick Overson, took me in and showed me around.
So we are inside one of the two main rooms of the Locust Lab here at Arizona State University. We affectionately refer to it as Hoppertown.
Hoppertown. Yeah. It's almost like it's not full of a plague.
Yeah, you know? Well, yeah. Okay. But anyway, they have these rooms, and they have a lot of cages with this metal mesh in the front, and you can see locusts.
Here. So this is the locust colony. So one of these environmental chambers we use.
And these are big honking insects. They're about 5 inches long. He offered to let me handle one. Frankly, I wasn't really up for it.
See, when you grab them, they try and use their legs as a defense mechanism and kick.
Wait, you didn't pick one up?
To a bird or a
no, Maddie.
Come on.
I did not.
Come on, Pelica. You're in Hoppertown.
I am not into immersion reporting. But I got really interested in, you know, how do you maintain a colony of locusts?
Like, what do they even eat?
Well, it turns out that most of the colony eats this stuff called wheatgrass, which you get in your juice bar. So they grow a ton of wheatgrass. But they're also interested, and this is where the control aspects comes in, but they're also interested in making a special locust chow.
We have a full range of them that span from very sugary, so very carbohydrate-rich diet. You could think of it kind of like donuts, all the way through through a spectrum from about to a balanced diet to then a very protein-heavy diet that would have lots of like whey protein in it, for instance, kind of like a bodybuilder shake.
Okay, so these locusts are either eating donuts or protein shakes.
Yeah,
I am really starting to identify with
these,
Pelica.
We know which one you'd be going for. These are two ends of a spectrum. There's either a high protein diet or a high carbohydrate diet. So you've got the steak diet or the donut diet. And the reason they're interested in this is they think that they can establish that locusts have a particular affinity for the carbohydrate diet. So what's the significance of that for
right.
controlling them?
Like,
well,
what's the real-world application okay. for that?
So the real-world application comes because of what they're growing in Senegal.
What are they growing?
They grow a lot of millet, and that's a grain. And if you grow the millet in healthy, well-cared-for soil, you get a millet that's high in protein. And if you grow it in poorly cared-for soil, you get a millet that's high in carbohydrates.
And the locusts love high carbohydrates.
Right, exactly right. They love that donut diet. And so if the farmers can be talked into keeping their fields in good shape by fertilizing them and making sure there's not a lot of runoff and stuff, then they will be growing a crop that the locusts are less likely to eat.
I mean, would this have to happen on like a big scale? How realistic of a solution is this?
Well, that's the big question. I mean, here's what Ariane's lab has been able to show up to now. That in the lab, locusts prefer a high-carb diet. And in places like Senegal, locusts tend to show up in poorer quality fields where the millet has a higher carb content. So the next step is to see if helping farmers take better care of their fields, which creates millet with higher protein and less carbs, actually makes a difference and keeps the locusts at bay. Now, will doing this help farmers against a mega swarm of locusts? No. When they're hungry, they're going to eat everything. But it should help manage infestations short of a cataclysmic plague. And I'll tell you what, I'll come back in 10 years and let you know if it works.
Okay. Joe Palca, NPR science correspondent and locust enthusiast. Joe works on a project called Joe's Big Idea, which examines the minds and motivations of scientists and inventors. This episode was produced by Rebecca Davis, edited by Viet Le, and fact-checked by Emily Vaughn. I'm Maddie Sofia. This is NPR Shortwave. We'll see you tomorrow.
This message comes from Capital One, offering commercial solutions you can bank on. Your business faces specific challenges and unique opportunities. That's why Capital One offers a comprehensive suite of financial services, custom-tailored to your short and long-term goals. Backed by the expertise, strategy, and resources of a top 10 commercial bank, a dedicated team works with you to support your success and help achieve your goals. Explore the possibilities at CapitalOne.com/commercial. Support for NPR and the following message come from BlackRock's podcast, The Bid. On the latest episode of The Bid, BlackRock's chairman and CEO, Larry Fink, discusses challenges facing investors such as retirement and others where the global capital markets figure into the solutions. Listen to the episode on The Bid and subscribe for market insights from BlackRock's thought leaders.
When the economic news gets to be a bit much,
listen to The Indicator from Planet Money. We're here for you, like your friends, trying to figure out all the most confusing parts. One story, one idea, every day, all in 10 minutes or less.
The Indicator from Planet Money, your friendly economic sidekick.
From NPR.